Web Talk Radio is brought to you by Web.com, the most trusted name on the net. When you're ready to get on the web, visit Web.com for domain names as low as $4.95. Web.com offers full-featured web hosting, including online store packages, starting at only $7.95 per month. Web.com has thousands of .web.com names available at www.web.com.
Web Talk is back on the air again, and this is Rob Greenlee, and Web Talk is at webtalkradio.com, and we've launched a new website at webtalkradio.com, so go check it out. We actually have two websites now. One is at webtalkradio.com. The other one is webtalkguys.com, which is what we started out with for many years. My name is Rob Greenlee.
And I'm Dana, and wow, are you guys going to ever be happy not to hear us say every week, coming soon, our new website. Put that to bed. I'm very happy about it. Not just the look and feel, which, by the way, is like eons beyond what our horrible, ugly site looked like for so long.
but that's been a good, reliable site for a lot of people out there. So I think it was a good site for us, but it was time to move on.
Goodbye, Orange.
That's right.
But it has got a nice little flash going on in the top banner, too. But it's got some features that we haven't had before, and a lot of people have been requesting. So I'm excited to say that there is a blog that we will actually keep up to date and quite regularly, and you can subscribe to it with an RSS feed.
Mm-hmm. And we're also going to offer an RSS feed of our audio content, too, so you can sign up for a direct feed of our MP3 files coming right to your RSS newsreader. If it supports that, it's like an enclosure capability that once you subscribe to it, you actually get the MP3 automatically downloaded to your computer. So it's really cool.
Well, caveat, dudes, just know that when some of the content's not quite migrated over, actually a lot of it.
Yeah.
So we're keeping the simultaneous sites up. So if you want to get some past stuff, go back to webtalkguys.com for the time being.
And you'll see a gradual shift over to webtalkradio.com over time. But we've got an extensive structure for our archive within the new site, so it'll be a lot better, and we're going to have a merger between downloadradio.org and webtalkradio.com. So you're going to see kind of those sites kind of merge together with the content. Well, we've got a great show this week, don't we, Dana?
Yeah, and of course, a lot of things happened this past week. We're going to cover them.
The Amazon.com folks officially launched their search engine, A9.
Dogpile becomes WebFetch in the UK, and Dogpile's toolbar integrates RSS feeds.
A glimpse into mobile media's future.
Want to do some web storm chasing with Hurricane Ivan live on the web. And we'll reach into that digital mailbag. We got an email from Dale about RSS feeds. Well, I'm sure most of you remember Star Trek The Next Generation and Will Wheaton, who's well known as playing Ensign Wesley Crusher. He's the Starfleet Ensign on the Enterprise for many years. Will was also the star of the motion picture Stand By Me and many other films. He's been a web blogger since the early days of blogging, and he's now an author of a new book, Just a Geek, which details his pursuit of love, life, and fulfillment beyond the Starship Enterprise to becoming just a geek blogger like the rest of us.
Fast forward about 17 years, I ran into Jonathan Frakes again, and I said, were you telling me the truth? Did we really all like each other? Or was that just my perception because I was a teenager and, you know, it was hidden from me? And he sat down and he looked at me and he said, W, it was lightning in a bottle. It had never happened before. It's never happened since. We were all so lucky. And I said, do you miss it as much as I do? And he said, you have no idea.
It's time for a brief summary of what happened this week on the web.
Well, there were some serious opportunities to do some storm chasing of Ivan, the terrible hurricane, on the web this past week.
And I think we have the web to thank for the fact that fewer people are actually dying from this, because there's so much information so instantaneously available, and I think that's been very helpful.
Yeah, and you could actually follow this. It was almost like a reality TV show through your computer screen, because you could actually see live radar and satellite photographs of the hurricane twirling and moving to its next destruction target. So it's something that I think has really been good is the communication, like Dana was saying, of these hurricanes and getting people out of the impact zones, which,
Rob,
I think has saved a lot of people.
I just have to share. You're like Mr. like media geek all this last 2 weeks. I think it's either he's got it on one of the news networks following all the political discussion, or he's got the hurricane on, and you know, this is just on his computer monitor in a little window. So it's just constantly, I mean, he's become news nerd.
I know exactly what's going on in every moment of Ivan's torture on the South Florida and that whole area around the Gulf. So it's been interesting. And I think it's a good thing.
I'm excited about the new relaunch, or the official launch
yeah.
of A9 from Amazon.com was my alma mater, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
A9 is a great little toolbar and search tool that actually about 6 months ago, the beta launch came out. Mm-hmm. We've been using it ever since as a toolbar. It's really nice. But now you can get it, and it's fully functional, and it's quite terrific.
I would say that this search engine is going to be a serious challenger to Google's search presence online, as well as Yahoo and Microsoft, because they're making a serious effort in producing a search engine that really does a lot of interesting combinations of search results right on the page. It actually will show you your search history, and it's kind of a personalized thing that you have to actually sign into this search engine and create an account with them that will actually manage your search engine experience. It's much more than what you're seeing at Yahoo or Google right now. It'll actually track your search bookmarks. You can actually get a toolbar that actually uses some of this technology in a real convenient way, and it also tracks the images. When you do a search, it actually pulls up search results from all these different sources.
I actually really like the diary part. If you actually go to a web page and you want to reference some information on there, but you don't want to have to bookmark it or anything, as long as you're signed in, you can make a diary entry, which basically almost – it appears like it's embedded in the web page. When mm-hmm. you come back 6 months later, there are your notes of why that page was important. Isn't that cool?
Well, and also it also searches Amazon's database of books, too. So that's a whole other resource that hasn't been available to any other search engine.
Well, I've got another search story for you, Rob. This one's funny. Another Seattle-based company, InfoSpace, has a property called Dogpile. It's a little search engine. You may remember Alfie the dog. He's like sort of the mascot. Well, they've had to kind of rethink the name of Dogpile. I guess particularly in Europe and UK, Dogpile refers more to what a dog will leave behind when you take him on a little walk.
Well, I think that's pretty obvious. I think that's – I don't know why it's more sensitive in the UK than it is here. Uh-huh. But it means the same thing here as it does over there. So I'm not quite sure.
It never occurred to me like that. But,
I think that the British and Europeans are a little bit more stuffy about things like this, I guess. Maybe they don't have as much of a sense of humor, but I don't know.
We love you.
We definitely love you over there, but it kind of makes you wonder a little bit.
Oh, no. So now it's called WebFetch. And that's interesting. It's still Dogpile right here?
Yeah. It's still going to maintain that for all the rest of the world. It's just that there's going to be a separate site set up for the UK and Europe for those people to go to.
Another example of being politically correct.
Well, in Dogpile and WebFetch now also has a really cool toolbar that does something that no other toolbar that I'm aware of does. It allows you to track RSS feeds right through the toolbar, so you can subscribe to RSS feeds.
Ours?
You can do it with ours as well. So go download this toolbar and you can plug in our RSS feed right into that.
And Alfie will fetch our little RSS
right
to your desktop.
That's right. And it's really convenient. It'll always be right there. You don't have to download this huge RSS news reader, which is really cool. And it does have some pre-configured feeds in there. It has news from ABC and Fox News as well, or actually the Fox Network. I don't know if it's Fox News in particular, it probably is. And it also allows you to keep track of what people are searching for online at that moment through a search engine called Search Spy. So go check it out. Go to dogpile.com and download this thing. It's really cool.
Dubious. Rob, our web future, our media web future, what is that going to look like? I mean, I'm so excited about the whole Wi-Fi thing. I'm basically bringing all the media to you, wherever you are in a public place.
Yeah, that's the future of all these mobile devices, these media devices. Microsoft's coming out with their portable media center type product, the MP3 players, smartphones. They're all going to have huge memory and storage capabilities. And as we see ubiquitous Wi-Fi and internet access come to these phones, you're going to be able to consume all sorts of media through these devices, as well as make phone calls. And they're going to really be your media device. You're going to be able to watch TV. You're going to be able to download audio. And you look at a service provider like Audio Feast, which is featuring the WebTalk guys.
Audio Feast will let you basically get live radio, internet radio onto your little device.
Yeah, and we've talked a lot about that
Skype
product. Yeah.
Skype is doing the phone thing, which you just mentioned. Wi-Fi basically uses your little Pocket PC or something as a phone.
Yeah, and this is all here and right now. You can actually do all these things right now. It's only going to get better over the next 5 years or so as more and more computing power and storage comes to cell phones. I mean, a lot of cell phones that are coming out here the next year are going to have Wi-Fi as well as a cell data network connection, and that's going to be a compelling solution for broadcast. It's going to change the whole landscape of what we experience right now, I think, is with broadcast, and it's a great opportunity for shows like Web Talk and some independent broadcasters out there to be able to reach a larger audience.
All right. Down with media conglomerates.
That's right. We're going to get big.
I'm reaching into the digital mailbag, and I'm pulling out one that we got from Dale King. He actually wrote us. He says he's been a big fan of listening to another show, IT Conversations. That's with Doug Kay. Wonderful show called ITConversations.com.
Which we had a little bit of a hand in helping him get started.
I kind of like to think that I gave him a big start on it. He was on our show, wanted to start his own show. He was on our show as a guest, and I gave him a lot of advice about how we set up our situation.
Yeah, and he's done a terrific job. So go check out ITConversations.com, too.
But anyway, Dale says that he kind of ran out of stuff to listen to. He kind of scoured the whole site, and he's listened to all the IT Conversations, found us, stuffs his clié full of web talk guys now, thank goodness. He had some advice and some suggestions for us, which incidentally we actually have integrated. So, guy, you read our mind, Dale.
Well, he would like us to offer BitTorrent type of application solutions here to distribute our show, and we are going to do that. We're going to take the downloadradio.org site content and integrate that in as a chronological listing of our show off of our new webtalkradio.com website. So we're going to be doing all this stuff because we see it as a huge trend, just like Dale is seeing it here, and we're going to continue pushing forward with trying to offer the latest and greatest.
And you'll never run out of stuff to listen to because I think I counted up something like 300 hours of content.
There's going
to
be a huge amount of content. It's all going to go up into that chronological listing. You're going to go back in time and
6 years of audio
and listen to what we were talking about, like Dana said, 4 or 5 years ago.
You want to hear what happened to pets.com? I mean, remember them. He also said that we should get an RSS feed going, and how we do as of just yesterday.
Yes. And if you want to send me an email or Dana, send me an email to rob@webtalkradio.com, or you can send it to Dana@webtalkradio.com, and we'd love to hear from you.
Support for Web Talk every week is coming from our good friends over at web.com, the best name, the best domain name on the web, and also a great place to register your domain name for as little as $4.95. You can even get a whole web hosting package, including e-commerce, for as little as $7.95 a month. That's a deal.
And we're all supported by InfoCreek at InfoCreek.com, and they offer terrific website design services, and you can actually go look at some of their work just by going to WebTalkRadio.com and see what they do, and you can see right there that they build some very cool, high-tech looking websites. So go check them out at InfoCreek.com. And don't miss our next guest, who's coming right up. We're joined by Will Wheaton, who's a child actor from the TV show Star Trek The Next Generation. He's now a blogger and author of a new book, and he's going to share with us his vision for blogging in the online world. You don't want to miss it. This is Web Talk Radio.
Things that you say, is it life or just the blame and worries away?
Hi, this is Rob Greenlee of Web Talk Radio. I've got a tip for you. If you're looking to register a new domain name or get a new website hosted, then support the Web Talk Radio show by visiting web.com. They have been a trusted name on the web for years and have had over 300,000 customers over the years. They specialize in domain name registrations and hosting, but they have a domain name registration as low as $4.95 per year, and that's for a yourname.web.com domain name. And they also have regular .com domain names for $6.95 per year. Web.com was recently ranked number one by tophost.com and CNET certified as being a top web hosting provider. Their hosting plans are as low as $7.95 per month, and that's even for an online e-commerce solution. So trust me, Web.com is a great place to get your solution, and you can give them a call at 1-800-761-2468. That's 1-800-761-2468, or just visit them right on their website at web.com.
Dude, check it out. Listen to Web Talk. Totally for sure. Your old man's not here.
Welcome back to Web Talk at WebTalkRadio.com. And don't forget to check out our new website at WebTalkRadio.com. My name is Rob Greenlee, and Dana Greenlee's in here with me on the other mic.
And I know most of you guys remember Star Trek The Next Generation, and you will remember Will Wheaton. He was the young actor that played Wesley Crusher, the Starfleet ensign, for many years. Will also was a star of Stand By Me and many other films. Now, he's been a web blogger since the early days of blogging, and he's now an author of his second book about his life called Just a Geek. It's an unflinchingly detailed look at his life and love and fulfillment beyond the Starship Enterprise, and how he became just a geek blogger like the rest of us.
Will is joining us right now on the line to chat about his journey from being a young star on Star Trek and his challenges to move on with his acting career and his struggles to distance himself from the Crusher role in the public eye, and how he has now found his place online as an author and has a website at willwheaton.net. Will, thanks for joining us on the show. It's great to have you on.
Thanks a lot. I'm very happy to be here.
Will, it's shocking to me to hear that many people in your past have been critical of your role as Wesley Crusher on Star Trek. You know, I thought that your role there was terrific. I watched it through the years. And why do you think people were so mean to you during that time?
I think that Wesley Crusher reflected a lot of what a lot of things that geeks don't like about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to be too smart for our own good. And when we were kids, very, very precocious. Extremely uncool. We never got the girl. We wanted to be Picard, but we were Wesley.
Yeah.
And for some people, you know, for some people that, you know, it made them very uncomfortable to be reminded what they were all the time.
Mm-hmm. The mirror was a little too reflective.
Exactly. And for other people, it reminded them of, like, you know, Wesley was sort of doing what they wanted to do. They wanted to be on the Enterprise. You know?
So they were jealous.
And there was a jealousy factor as well. Over the years, I have determined that it was actually the people who were really, really cruel, like the Usenet weenies, really is a statistically insignificant number of people.
Oh, sure.
And I mean, I know just over the years, people who have emailed me through my website, people who I've talked to since I started going to Star Trek conventions again, you know, in the last 5 years, there are so many more people who really enjoyed everything about the show, including my performance, including my character. And I got an email yesterday from a girl who said the subject line of the email is Wesley Crusher saved my life.
Wow.
And I thought, oh man, I don't need this, but I read it anyway. And it was this amazing story from this girl who was, lived in a really lousy situation with really screwed up siblings and decided one day to watch Star Trek, was not a science fiction fan, knew nothing about it, but watched Wesley and saw how motivated he was and how driven he was. And the first episode she saw, she told me, was this episode where Wesley doesn't get into Starfleet Academy the first time because he fails the entrance test. And Wesley vows to just keep going. He's going to go back. He'll try next year. And if he doesn't get in, he'll try the year after that. And we know that one way or another, this kid's getting into Starfleet Academy, and nothing is going to dissuade him from it. And he's focused, and he knows what he wants, and he knows what he has to do to get it. And she told me that she grabbed on to that and held on long enough to be pulled out of a really bad situation. And basically, what could have been a dead end for her.
Wow.
And has gone on. I think she's in graduate school now. And went on to get an engineering degree. Halfway through her engineering degree, she realized she didn't want to be an engineer. She really wanted to be a writer. So she came out to LA and she emailed me. She said, it's so weird. I wondered whatever happened to Wesley. So I looked up your name on the internet and I saw your website. And it's just so weird that, you know, you're a writer now. And I want to be a writer. And she told me that she realized that it wasn't Wesley's being an engineering guy that she thought was great. It was Wesley's dedication to doing the right thing and solving problems and being goal-oriented. And she was really inspired by that. And I've heard stories like that for years, you know. But
yeah,
when
I'm
I was
sure
an insecure
you...
teenager and, you know, I was really uncomfortable with myself. For a long time, I was convinced that, you know, 50 people could tell me how much they liked this thing that I did, and one person could say, you know, I hate you.
Yeah.
And I would think, oh, that one person knows something that everybody else doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I would listen to it. And mm-hmm. I even did that in the first few, you know, first couple of years of writing on my website. And it just took, you know, just took time,
sure.
And achievement for me to feel like, you know, that's not my problem.
And this, indeed, this email should go into your warm and fuzzy email folder to pull up whenever you get one of those anonymous bullies writing you.
It's funny because I got one yesterday from this guy. I think two words were spelled correctly in the entire email. One word was George and the other word was Bush. And the rest of the email was all about how I hate America because I'm a Democrat. And
I hate,
how could I possibly speak badly about our commander in chief during war? Like, this guy just drank the Republican talking points Kool-Aid, went off on me.
We get those emails too all the time from people because we have a tendency to go a little bit toward the liberal side of the fence too. And boy, people are sure quick to criticize.
I'm all for, like, disagreeing about things and having a dialogue about the things that we disagree about, because I think that if we only listen to the echo chamber, then we never grow. You know, like, if we don't examine our lives, if we don't examine our beliefs, if we don't have our beliefs challenged, then we have big problems. You know, like, if we're so committed to our beliefs, we should want them to be challenged,
mm-hmm.
so that we can either have them reinforced, or we can, you know, see them in a different light and maybe reconsider. And this guy just wasn't willing to do that. You know, it was very, very clear to me from reading it that this guy just wanted to yell at me. And, you know, I get those from time to time. But overwhelmingly, I mean, it's like well over 100-1 is the ratio of a positive, thoughtful, friendly, insightful, kind notes. And they're not like, I think you're great. You know, it's not like that at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's stuff like, you wrote this thing about your kid, and it reminded me about this thing about my kid, and I just thought I'd share it with you. Like, that kind of stuff happens all the time. I love that.
Yeah.
It's very human. And that's what struck me about not only your book, but WillWheaton.net, is that you come across as, I know this is so trite, but a regular person. It's not about me, the celebrity, or anything like that.
I've taken great pain to not buy into that I'm a celebrity thing. I really don't like it. I know that when I go places, people recognize my face because they've seen it on TV. And, you know, I sort of, you know, always thank them for their attention and thank them for watching mm-hmm. the show and, you know, answer their questions if they have them or whatever. I get kind of giddy and excited when somebody tells me that they read my website. Because that feels like it's more like about me, you know, it's not about some character that I've played.
Yeah.
But I think that the day that I start thinking of myself as a celebrity, the day that I start thinking I can go to the front of the line, you know, like, and I have that kind of, do you know who I am idea?
Sure.
Then I have completely lost the lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And if that ever happens to me, I have completely, like, I've just sort of, like, I've just forgotten, you know, like, what's important. My priorities have been completely thrown away. Luckily, I'm married to a phenomenal, phenomenal woman, and I am raising amazing kids, and I have a terrific family. And really good, really honest and reliable friend. And I just don't think that I would let that happen to myself. I was headed that way when I was 17, 18 years old. I was really on my way to being a really big a-hole. And I was able to, you know, I recognized that was starting
mm-hmm.
and did what I could to change course.
That's all more about you being a teenager anyway and finding your own way in the world. And
people tell me that. And I can accept that to a certain degree, but I also think that, you know, like, I know a lot of teenagers. I live with two of them, and they're really not like that.
Mm.
You know, I wrote out an equation this morning for another interview that was teenager plus money plus fame plus perception of power equals really big ass, and that's what I was.
Well, if you don't mind, well, just briefly, we want to talk a little bit about your experience on Star Trek Next Generation, but we definitely want to spend a lot of time on your website and the
okay.
book, of course. You actually talk in your book about having a very pleasant relationship with a lot of the cast, at least during that time.
With the entire cast.
With the entire cast.
Yeah.
And in some of the crew, although I understand some that wasn't true across the board in some situations. Do you want to expand on any of that? And
I would, you know, yeah, actually I would. When I worked on Next Generation, so I started when I was 14, and I stopped when I was 19. And I remember one day, I think it was probably during, like, the third season or so, like every celebrity in the world wanted to be on Star Trek. Like huge famous people would come and put on ridiculously uncomfortable Klingon makeup to basically be an extra for a day.
Sure.
Just because they wanted to do it, you know?
Yeah.
It was
cool back then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember that I thought that was cool. You know, I know that there were some people on the production side, on the studio side, who were like, ha ha, look at these dorks. But I thought that it was cool, you know?
Mm-hmm.
One of the people that we had working with us was a really big, well-known, big-name actor who probably wants to remain nameless, so I won't name him.
Okay.
And we were sitting down between shots one day, and he said, you guys, meaning the cast of Next Generation, like, you guys love each other.
Yeah.
You are a family. And he said, I have worked on so many shows where the cast just hates each other,
mm-hmm.
or they tolerate each other. But there's no sense of camaraderie. There's no, you know, you're like, you guys are brothers in arms, all of you. And he said, it's been so wonderful to work with you this week. The next week, I related this conversation to Jonathan Frakes. And I said, is that true? And he said, oh, yeah, yeah, we all really like each other. Fast forward about 17 years, I ran into Jonathan Frakes again. And I said, hey, Johnny, do you remember when I talked to you about, you know, how we all loved each other? And he said, yeah, you know, that he remembered. And I said, were you telling me the truth? Did we really all like each other? Or was that just my perception because I was a teenager and, you know, it was hidden from me? And he sat down and he looked at me and he says, W, it was lightning in a bottle. It had never happened before. It's never happened since.
Mm-hmm.
We were all so lucky. And I said, do you miss it as much as I do? And he said, you have no idea.
Oh. And he's gone on to so much that still to him is precious.
Yeah.
You know, I have to tell you, when I read a part of your book, right after you were on your last day of filming Nemesis and you were walking back to your trailers with Patrick Stewart. And
yeah.
I realized that I was actually had tears coming down my eyes because of something he said to you. And I just, can you relate that moment and the sort of the feeling about it?
Yeah. So it's the last day and, it's my only moment in the entire book, Just a Geek, that I think is, you know, that I would, it's like, it's my one, it's like my token literary moment, where I wrote, you know, it's the very end. Like, it's the last time that I'm going to wear the spacesuit. It's the last time we're ever going to see you. It's the last time I will ever get to put on Wesley Crusher. I'm standing on the stage and, they say, okay, so that's a wrap, you know, it's the end of the day, the picture wrap on Will Wheaton. And the crew just doesn't care because they don't know me. It's a different crew. It's not the crew we worked on.
Mm.
We worked with on the show. And, Patrick and Gates were there and they applauded really warmly and I tried, you know, not to cry. And I wrote, you know, well, this is the way Wesley Crusher ends, not with a bang, but a whimper. Cause it was just like over like any other day.
Mm.
Patrick says, you know, I'm walking back, you know, let's walk together. So we're going to walk together back to our trailers and we're talking about what it's like to, you know, be on the lot and, you know, relating to stories like that. And I said, and I realized, you know, I really like him. And the whole time that I was there, you know, I regretted not appreciating Star Trek when I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And I regretted taking things for granted. And that I will chalk up to being a teenager. I will acknowledge that, you know, when you're a teenager, you don't want to be at Paramount. You want to be at the beach or you want to be wherever the girls are, you know.
The grass is always greener on the other side of the fence when you're a teenager.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like, you know, a cat is always on the wrong side of a closed door,
yeah,
you know?
Right.
And it was like that for me. So I said, you know, we were talking about things and I said, Patrick, can I tell you something? And he said, yeah. And I said, I was such a jerk when I was younger. You know, when I was a teenager, I didn't appreciate being here. I didn't appreciate working with you. And I wish that I could take it all back. And I wish that I could do it again. I really wish that I could do it right, you know? And he stopped and he put his hand on my shoulder and he said, my dear, you were a teenager. It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
We all knew you were a teenager. And I wasn't really happy about working with a child actor. The same way Picard wasn't really happy about having a child on his bridge. But you were a delightful actor and I loved working with you. And, you know, Patrick was a father figure and a mentor and a hero to me.
Mm-hmm.
And at that moment, like, what do I say? I didn't know what to say, so I just said thanks.
Yeah, he seems like such a warm person. I mean, even, you know, the different things that I've seen him do as an actor, he seemed like such a genuine person.
I get the sense from Patrick that, you know, though he is a, you know, a multimillionaire and a respected actor who will someday get his Oscar for something, he has never forgotten what it is like to be on stage, off Broadway.
Oh, okay.
Playing to a house of seven people.
Mm-hmm.
And you're
personal.
On that stage because you love the work.
Mm-hmm.
And he's never forgotten that. He respects the art and he respects the act of acting. And that's really, you know, that's the difference, the fundamental difference between an actor who earns his way up through hard work and, for lack of a better term, would be apprenticeship, and someone who is a celebrity or a personality who is thrust into the limelight, you know, and rides out that 15 minutes as long as they can.
That is very nice of you to say, and I know that they also think the same of you, and that was very touching to hear you relate. Thank you. I want to sort of move forward a little bit. You had this sort of, if you could explain a little bit of this transition that you had after Star Trek as you then became a geek.
Well, I always was.
Okay. You were.
Yeah.
And like
most geeks, I was really shy and socially inept and super awkward and just kind of kept to myself all the time. I wasn't about to go broadcasting like, hey, everybody, I have a bag full of dice in my pocket. You know, I wasn't about to do that. I wanted people to think I was cool. It wasn't until I was about 25 that I just thought, you know what? Screw it. I'm a geek and I'm proud of that.
You embraced yourself and then you bought WillWheaton.net.
Yeah.
Which, why not.com? Was that taken?
Because at the time, somebody else already had it, and I didn't want to go through that whole thing.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, .com is like a commercial thing. .net is a network of people.
Oh, okay.
I'd rather put it at .net anyway.
Actually, good idea. Yeah.
And it turns out that the guy that had originally registered WillWheaton.com, he wanted to make a fan site because he was a fan of my work.
Oh.
I met him. He said, you can have the domain if you want to. And I was so busy with other stuff that I never filled out the stuff that I needed to fill out to get it transferred over to me. And now some squatter has it.
Oh, no.
Aww.
Yeah, but you know what? It doesn't matter that much because everybody knows it's WillWheaton.net.
Exactly.
Okay, well, you branded that over the years.
Which is kind of cool, huh?
Yeah. Let's move on and talk a little bit about your site and everything. How long it's been up? What are you doing on your website right now?
It started in 2000. And we just had, me and my website, we just had our fourth birthday.
It's a partnership, right?
Yeah. it was just turned four on August 23rd. And
that's forever, you know.
Seriously, it's a very long time in internet years.
Yes, it is.
And it's quite something. I mean, you've got audio blogs, the photo blog, you've got information about the book, the soapbox, and a very interesting store, I have to say. Why don't you just take us on a visual journey through it and tell us a little bit about the back-end tools that you use, because you're a one-man operation as far as you run that site.
Well, the centerpiece of the entire thing is my blog, and my blog is powered by Movable Type. I'm running 2.6.6.1 with a few really vital and important hacks worked into the actual executable. I haven't upgraded to 3.0 because that's going to break a lot of the things that I've done.
Mm-hmm.
I use PHP to do a whole bunch of server-side includes and super, super, super minimal browser identification and stuff. For the message board, I use an open-source tool called PHP BB2, which exposes PHP bulletin board.
Mm-hmm.
My Moblog is powered by BuzzNet. I used to use Text America, and I enjoyed them. I think the guys that run Text America are really nice guys, and I really liked what they did. But BuzzNet was really ahead of the curve using Creative Commons licenses to make sure that images still belonged to the people who took them.
Oh.
Anything I put up there was still belonged to me. I still had the copyright and all that stuff. So I switched over to BuzzNet. For Audioblog, I was using software created by the Odd Blog team.
Mm-hmm.
They were bought by Blogger, so it's actually called Audio Blogger now, and it's part of Blogger.
Mm-hmm.
In the very, very early days of my website, when I was hosted at GeoCities, you can find links to this at WillWheaton.net, back to the original embarrassingly designed website. like How Not to Design a Website by Will. I used Blogger because I didn't have access to executable. But it was great. You know, I tell people all the time, I think TypePad is a fantastic way to run a blog site. LiveJournal is great too. And so is Blogger. It just depends on what the individual wants to do, what they expect mm-hmm. from the, you know, what they expect from the software and what, you know, how much they plan to grow with it.
Oh man, I'm all over LiveJournal. There's a big role-playing theatrical muse community in there. And
oh, that's great.
It's wonderful because you can take on personas. There's probably a Will Wheaton role player out there.
There's a Will Wheaton community. There's a couple of Will Wheaton communities out there. As a matter of fact, somebody wrote a really kind editorial. It's called Will Wheaton Fans, and they wrote a really kind editorial basically saying, you know, everybody who is, you know, not many people give me crap anymore. I mean, it's like one out of 1,000 people now. And I think it's probably the same guy just behind a proxy. It's really changed. You know, I hear from a lot of people that they like my website. They relate to something that I talked about, or, you know, they were inspired by something that I did, or, you know, my wife and I have done a lot of things to, you know, to try to help people. And, you know, something that we've done is inadvertently, helped someone out or whatever, you know. And somebody in there's a community, I think it's called Will Wheaton Fans, wrote just a phenomenally kind, editorial sort of about those things. Somebody else also, syndicates my blog, and you can read the full posts on LiveJournal, but I don't know what the name is.
Oh, very good. Okay. Now, this is an embarrassing question. I think a lot of people will lie, but we'll see how truthful you are. How many hours a day do you spend on the computer, Will?
About 8.
Oh.
Well, because I work there, you know? I mean, I write a lot of the time. I'm tuning up the site. I don't really read newspapers or watch television. I get most of my news online.
Mm-hmm.
There are blogs that I read. I play poker. And that's where I kind of spend, you know, where most people go to the office to go to work. Well, I go to the office and go to work. It's just on the other side of my house.
Yeah.
So,
when I am writing,
you know, it's sort of like it's like being in production, you know?
Sure.
Like when I'm working on a book, I write at least 3 hours a day. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a little bit more, but usually right around 3 hours is about how long I can maintain creative focus. And for that time, you know, sometimes I'll get really great material and some days, I'll end up throwing away everything that I worked on. When I'm not, I guess in production is a good way to phrase it. When I'm not doing that, you know, I try to write something new for my blog every morning. Although in the past, I was very disciplined. I would sit down and write something new every single day. Nowadays, especially over the last 6 or 10 months, I spent so much time up until spring working really, really hard on finishing Just a Geek that nowadays, you know, I get up and I walk my dog and I, you know, take care of stuff around the house and I hang out with my family. And I've discovered that if I don't write first thing in the morning, very, very difficult for me to focus and get any kind of momentum going later in the day.
Hmm. We're chatting with Will Wheaton. He's an actor and author of the new book, Just a Geek. He's telling us all about his adventures writing the book and living life on set and off of Star Trek The Next Generation. Stick around. We have much more with Will in a moment. You're listening to Web Talk Radio.
Last night, I had a dream that we went to Disneyland. When on all the rides, didn't have to wait.
Hi, this is Rob Greenlee of Web Talk Radio. I've got a tip for you. If you're looking to register a new domain name or get a new website hosted, then support the Web Talk Radio show by visiting web.com. They have been a trusted name on the web for years and have had over 300,000 customers over the years. They specialize in domain name registrations and hosting, but they have a domain name registration as low as $4.95 per year, and that's for a yourname.web.com domain name. And they also have regular .com domain names for $6.95 per year. Web.com was recently ranked number one by tophost.com and CNET certified as being a top web hosting provider. Their hosting plans are as low as $7.95 per month, and that's even for an online e-commerce solution. So trust me, Web.com is a great place to get your solution, and you can give them a call at 1-800-761-2468. That's 1-800-761-2468, or just visit them right on their website at web.com. I'm Rob Greenlee, and this is Web Talk Radio at webtalkradio.com. Dana Greenlee is in here with me, too.
And rounding out our little trifecta on the phone with us still is Will Wheaton, the actor and author of a second book, Just a Geek, You'll remember Will from the movie Stand By Me and, of course, Star Trek The Next Generation. We just saw him the other night in a movie called The Book of Names. Very enjoyable movie. Will's telling us about his new book and his experiences working on Star Trek. Will, are you planning any more books in the future?
Yeah, I have a I have an agreement with O'Reilly to do a book on web design.
Oh,
now, okay. What it's going to be is it's not going to be, you know, I'm not a designer. It's not going to be that kind of book. What it's going to be is kind of a book on design philosophy, on how to put together, how to use tools to put together a personal website. You know, there are books like on, you know, how to make a blogging website. And there's books on how to make a website for your business. And there are fantastic books on learning HTML and PHP and I mean, in all the tools that you need to, you know, to do that sort of thing. But when I was designing my website, there really wasn't anything that said, all right, so you want to make a website that's basically just to communicate with your friends? Well, here's how to do it. Here's tools that are available to you. Here's some things to look out for, and here are some examples. There was nothing like that. So that's the book that I'm writing, hopefully will be aimed at, you know, it'll be aimed at people who aren't eggheads like me, but also people who, they know how to open up, you know, they know how to do more than just, you know, look at email.
Will you still inject some of that, your own voice, your humor, and your sort of your style? Or is it going to be very textbook?
No, I can't help it. I mean, I have to write like that, you know. Otherwise, it's no fun.
Yeah.
I don't do anything if it's not fun. I'm really kind of stubborn that way. If something is super, super, super tedious and it's not a good time, I just don't bother with it. It'll be fun for me to do a book where I get to have a conversation with an unknown reader. My friend Randall Schwartz, who wrote Learning Perl, and also wrote, Perl Objects, References, and Modules. He said when he writes his books for O'Reilly, he creates a character that he's talking to. And mm-hmm. I forget what he names the character. And at the end of each chapter, he thinks, all right, did I teach my guy, you know, these five things before the end of this chapter? If I did, then I can move on to the next chapter. So I'm going to do that. I'm just going to act like I'm teaching actually a friend of mine who I have taught a lot of design stuff. I'll just go back through, you know, and have conversations with, you know, basically have conversations with him in print.
And it's like that in radio, too. We're supposed to picture, you know, a 34-year-old soccer mom, you know, and talk to her or whatever your demographic is. I really liked the flow and the style and the formatting of Just a Geek because you had these sort of real-time now inserted with blog entries that sort of gave mm-hmm. you perspective from when you wrote it. And it was just made it so interesting to read.
Stephen King says that you have to write for your ideal reader. Mm-hmm. And he wrote a great book called On Writing, where he talks about getting rid of unnecessary words and not using a passive voice and being really focused and writing quickly and to the point and, you know, letting your audience fill in details that aren't important to you but might be important to them in terms of their mind's eye. And my first draft of Just a Geek is dreadful. As I refined it and as I reworked it and as I threw out the ideas that I thought were kind of extraneous and figured out what it was about, as soon as I knew what that book was about, I was able to keep going. It started out as just like, here's 1 year at willwheaton.net. And I kind of slammed it all together. And then I started talking about what was going on. And then I figured out what the story was about. Then I figured out what the spine of the story was. And when I knew that, I was able to realize this thing's not important. I need to put this thing back in. I can spend more time on this thing over here. And I wanted to keep a very direct and simple conversational style so that the reader hopefully feels like they're sitting down and listening to me tell stories about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was going for. Like I said, I want to be David Sedaris when I grow up. You know, except not gay and living in Paris. You know, I want to make other people feel the way I feel when I listen to his books. Mm-hmm. And I really paid a lot of attention to his style and the way that he, you know, the way that he does things. And I paged through Bruce Campbell's book a couple of times in bookstores when I was working on mine because I thought that, you know, he and I probably have a similar type of audience. Anyway, I hope that I succeeded because that's what I wanted to do.
Did you always know that you wanted to be a writer or an author when you grew up?
When I was a kid, I loved English and I loved writing. And mm-hmm. after Stand By Me, all of the interviews that I did, they always said, you know, are you a writer like Gordy? And people asked me that so often. I didn't realize that it was just some insipid media question. I thought, geez, maybe I should be a writer like Gordy. And I was writing stories and I was doing things for, you know, writing stories for the family and, mm-hmm. You know, I did a lot of, you know, it would be cool if this thing happened and then I'd write about it. And today that's still how I do things. what always starts something for me is the question, hey, could I do this? Or the statement, wouldn't it be cool if? And then I go from there. When I was a kid, all through, like up until like seventh grade, I did all kinds of writing and all kinds of creative writing. I talk about it a little bit. I think it's in chapter 10 of my book. But then once I finished Stand By Me and then went straight into Star Trek, I believed the hype, you know? I really believed that I was going to be like the next big thing because that's what people were telling me. I have since learned that that's what they tell everyone. But I really thought that that's what was going to happen. So I focused exclusively on being an actor and also on like being a famous actor, mm-hmm. To the complete exclusion of everything else in my life. when I was like 20 or 21, I started writing in a journal. And I realized as I was writing in this journal that I was being really confessional. I was like owning up to a lot of things that I had done that I regretted. And I was talking about people I treated badly and how much I regretted being a jerk and, you know, something that had happened. And it was like the diary of regret, you know. Mm-hmm. And I set it aside and I never picked it up again until like after I'd started WillWheaton.net and after I'd been blogging for a while. And I realized that I just sort of taken, you know, 8 years off. And kind of picked up again where I had left off in terms of what I was writing about and how I was feeling.
Well, that's exactly what a blog is just a journal.
Yeah, and
it's just a public one.
Yeah, and you know they can. I just have to defend blogs for a minute, you know, because I hear really kind of ridiculous criticism of blogs. You know, there are absolutely 15-year-old girls going on and on about how much they love Hanson, you know, but.
Well, there's so many different things you can do with it. I mean,
that's not the whole thing.
It earned its legitimacy this last, the DNC and the RNC, when they invited the bloggers in. So it helped.
Well, there's so many.
Yeah, I think so.
So many different uses for them.
Yeah, it can be whatever you want it to be. And it doesn't, you know, you can write about, I have a friend who is a brilliant writer. And he's got a writing job at MTV right now. And he's a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant writer. And his blog is called knickerblog.com. And Shane writes about things that he did when he was a kid. He writes about his experiences working on this show. He writes about something that he saw down the street. All of his stuff has sort of a reflective quality to it. You know, he's sort of looking at things and seeing how things that are going on today reflect things that had happened to him before. I love to read it. It's great to read. I read his website every single day.
Wow.
And I don't feel like I'm along for the ride. I just think, like, this guy's got great insights into his life, and he's a friend of mine from the Acme Theater, so it's interesting to read stuff and then see him 2 weeks later at Acme, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And go, hey, you wore Z Cavaricci pants in 1988. You wrote about it in your blog. Ha ha. You know? But then I also spend a lot of time reading political blogs. You know, there are some blogs that are just funny, you know?
Tell us a few of them. I mean, I want to know what you read.
I read the Daily Coast several times a day. And Joshua Marshall's Talking Points Memo. And Atria. And the Tab from the American Prospect. And I'm trying to visualize my bookmarks bar.
Do you link to them on your blog?
I have at various times, yeah.
I have to find them.
Yeah. I read Juan Cole, Informed Comment, and Matthew Iglesias, and Kevin Drum. My friend Kathleen, writes a website, called Dirty Fez that I read regularly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I contribute occasionally to blogging.la and also to VH1's Best Week Ever blog. So I check them, you know, fairly frequently to make sure that there's not something going on that I could have written about, you know, where I see it and think, man, I should have covered that story or whatever it is. But I spend most of my time at Total Fark.
Oh, okay, yeah, okay. I'm familiar with that one. Yeah, it seems like this whole blogging area kind of has a close-knit group of guys that blog, or they're the big brains of the technology sector. I don't know, that's what some of the guys like to call themselves. Do you feel like you're getting plugged into that community now more since your book has come out, or were you always a part of that whole, that blogging trend?
I think that I was blogging before it was cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was doing it at the real, like, sort of toward, I came in after it had been going on for about 6 months or 7 months, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Blogger was still relatively new.
Mm-hmm.
And the Open Diary was really popular at that time. I don't think even Zanga had started yet, but I'm not sure. I could be wrong. I wasn't aware of it back then anyway. And Gray Matter was, you know, a really kind of advanced blogging tool at the time. And, you know, I, I, I really respect the blog community, and I really respect the people that did it before me, and I really respect the people who are doing it right now. Mm-hmm. I never sought any kind of like place in the blog hierarchy. Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I was never really interested in trying to make myself, you know, at the top of the pile or anything like that. That just wasn't important to me. I did hope in the early days to be accepted by these people who were established, because I figured that I was sort of trying to, you know, I was coming to their party and I was trying to set up a table with, you know, in their tent.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some people were very welcoming and very helpful, and some people were really cruel and unhelpful.
Just like anywhere you go, probably goes the whole
yeah,
spectrum.
I think so. You know, and it was sort of like when I started the blog, it was a lot of the same stuff that I experienced with Wesley Crusher all over again. There were people who were pissed off that I was getting attention because I happened to be on TV, and then there were other people, you know, who were really excited that this guy they'd watched before was doing the same thing they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Most people were indifferent. You know, there's just so much stuff online now anyway that the content is so incredibly varied it's really difficult to, you know, to just stay caught up with like the five or six things that I read regularly.
We're in the middle of a conversation with Will Wheaton. He's the actor of great movies such as Stand By Me and, of course, many years as Ensign Wesley Crusher on Star Trek The Next Generation and many movies since. He's just authored Just a Geek, available now at bookstores near you through O'Reilly Books. And, of course, you can find out much more about Will at his own blogging website, willwheaton.net. Be sure to stay connected. More with Will in just a moment. You're listening to Web Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Rob Greenlee of Web Talk Radio. I've got a tip for you. If you're looking to register a new domain name or get a new website hosted, then support the Web Talk Radio show by visiting web.com. They have been a trusted name on the web for years and have had over 300,000 customers over the years. They specialize in domain name registrations and hosting, but they have a domain name registration as low as $4.95 per year, and that's for a yourname.web.com domain name. And they also have regular .com domain names for $6.95 per year. Web.com was recently ranked number one by tophost.com and CNET certified as being a top web hosting provider. Their hosting plans are as low as $7.95 per month, and that's even for an online e-commerce solution. So trust me, web.com is a great place to get your solution, and you can give them a call at 1-800-761-2468. That's 1-800-761-2468, or just visit them right on their website at web.com. Web Talk Radio is back. I'm Rob Greenlee, and I'm here with Web Girl Dana.
We're in the middle of a conversation with actor and author Will Wheaton. He just finished his book, Just a Geek, and that follows his other book, Dancing Barefoot. Will's a very successful and entertaining blogger over at willwheaton.net. Be sure and check that out. And you'll want to pick up one or both of his books at a bookstore near you, either online or bricks and mortar. Now, if you stay tuned till the very end of this chat with Will, you'll have a chance to win either Dancing Barefoot or Just a Geek from us. Thanks to the generosity of O'Reilly Books and Will Wheaton, we have a couple to give away. Now, this is going to require some thinking on your part, so just be listening and paying attention and go visit willwheaton.net. And we'll give some questions at the end of the show. If you're able to find out the answers from Will Wheaton's website and you're the first to email us at webtalkradio.com, you may just have one of Will's books in your hot little hands within the week.
What is the next big thing you think with blogs that we're going to see down the line, just based on the fact you've been doing it for so long and you can kind of see a little bit of where the trends are going? What do you think is going on?
Camera phones are really beginning to come into their own.
Mm-hmm.
As they get to be higher resolution, I think that we'll see more people, you know, mo-blogging, which is what they call it. And I think that's really interesting. There's something really wonderful to me about being able to see pretty much any spot in the world at any given time. I love it when a whole bunch of different people go to like a sporting event and you get to see, you know, if you check their moblogs, you get to see what they're seeing from all these different perspectives. I was at a Dodger game earlier this year, mm-hmm. before Paul De Podesta decimated our pitching staff.
Yeah.
And, Eric Gagne comes into the game And it was the first time all season I'd been at a Dodger game where they weren't getting killed at the end of the game. So I actually got to watch Gagne pitch. So yeah. I took a picture of him and put it on my Moblog. And then I went and checked the Los Angeles area Mobloggers, and just about everybody was at that game. So you got to see where everyone was sitting in Dodger Stadium, because they'd all taken pictures of Gagne when he came in. I thought that was really, really cool. I also think that audio blogging is going to, you know, gonna step it up a notch a little bit too.
What about video blogs?
I think that ultimately video blogs are a natural extension of what we're doing now. So many people are still on dial-up that, you know, video is not really, I don't think video is very practical for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I also worry that if video stuff becomes really, really easy to use, it's going to become the embedded MIDI file of the, you know, of the 2000s.
So annoying.
Yeah, and I really don't want that to happen.
Well, it's the broadband generation, you know. It's going to be, you know, video everywhere on your walls and everywhere, right?
The democratization of video.
Yeah, that's right.
But it's really interesting to look at, like, the Independent Media Center and you know, follow when something major is going on at some city in the world. You know, that acts as a clearinghouse for people who have various forms of media, you know, camera phones or video cameras or recording devices or just, you know, a keyboard, to talk about what they're seeing in the streets.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that I really believe in the egalitarian nature of the Internet, that, you know, that the most interesting content is going to be different for each person.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, all these people can sort of rise to the top of their own, you know, small sort of spheres of influence.
Yeah.
And I really think that something like the Independent Media Center, it really democratizes about, you know, reporting, and really puts it in the hands of real people instead of instead of corporations.
We're going to all be really some form of broadcast as far as what we contribute. I mean, we've all been doing that if we've had a personal website. That's just kind of the early days. But I can really see us, not unlike what we're doing with this show, but even at a greater degree, we all create content for our families or for friends or whoever we do it for. But it just seems like it's such a it's going to be such a big opportunity, I think, as processing power and storage and the tools become better. I think we're all
there's something else happening, too, where hard drives are getting bigger and cheaper.
Yeah.
And computers are getting faster and cheaper, and Moore's Law seems to still be relevant. And it is going to make it, just makes it easier. I'm really lucky, you know, the Internet is so decentralized, I was able to go straight to the audience. I was able to take my first book, Dancing Barefoot, and take it directly to people who wanted to buy it. I didn't have to hope that some buyer at a bookstore would decide, okay, I want to take that book. I didn't have to worry about that. I just knew that if I wrote it and said, here's what it is, please take a chance on it, that there would be enough people in the audience who would be interested in checking it out. And that caught Tim O'Reilly's attention.
Yeah.
And what's really interesting is that now, Just a Geek, bigger book, longer book, I think it shows my maturity as a writer.
Yeah.
I'm having a lot of the same trouble that I had as an actor, where the audience that knows me, they're all over it, and they're buying it like crazy, and they're recommending it to their friends, and they really, really like it. But that mainstream that has shut me out for years as an actor, shutting me out as an author also.
Hmm.
I can't get any traditional media to talk to me. You know, I can't get any of, like, the big networks to do any kind of promotion at all. I'm even having a hard time with some of the chain bookstores.
Interesting.
They're just like, yeah, we're not interested.
Well, just got to keep after it. I think you'll break through.
Yeah, we're staying focused, you know. Yeah. But it's, you know, it's interesting. It's like people like you guys who understand how to use the Internet just to go to people who care, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't have to go. You can go around the gatekeepers.
Well, you can. I mean, and there's enough people that are interested in the kind of content that we create or the kind of content that you're creating that makes a big enough audience. Heck, you know, there's nothing wrong with having a couple million people listen to you all around the world. It doesn't have to be a million people just in L.A.
And that's what I think the real power of the Internet is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why people who have traditionally benefited from a top-down information economy and a top-down business economy are so threatened by the Internet, and they're trying so hard to regulate it out, you know, to where it's, you know, just where it ceases to be useful.
Sure. I mean, look at Prince, because he just said, forget you, record, you know, RIAA.
I'm going direct.
And Pearl Jam did it too, you know?
Yeah, with the ticket sales, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to see a lot more than that.
You know, I have a lot of friends who work at XM, And I have some friends who are in, you know, kind of traditional terrestrial radio in California. And the internet is rapidly just making traditional forms of media completely obsolete.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
And you know, I mean, there's those of us that are online, I mean, it's sort of like we're you know, who understand this and know how to tune into things online, whether that's a radio broadcast or, you know, watching a NASA webcast or, you know, whatever, getting our news online or whatever it is. I'd say we're still about 2 years ahead of the zeitgeist.
That's well, that and when wireless becomes something that we can get anywhere at any time, it's going to shake up the whole broadcast model that we've seen.
It scares the hell out of me that, you know, a few very large, pretty evil corporations could have control of the last 1,000 feet.
Clear Channel.
that absolutely terrifies me. You know, if Clear Channel decides that, you know, sort of the way that they, you know, I just don't like the idea of some company deciding what, you know, what I should be able to do and what I should be able to hear and that sort of thing.
That's right.
Well,
and government.
There's kind of the same kind of danger right now happening with companies like Comcast and some of those kind of companies. They're starting to flex their muscle a little bit about blocking ports and stuff.
Yeah.
And that could cause that same kind of problem.
Yeah.
In the bigger picture. So hopefully that doesn't happen.
Yeah. Luckily there's 65,000 ports, so
yeah,
get around them.
There's a few ports to work with, yeah.
Jeeps, you are a geek. Well, you knew that number. It just kind of flowed out.
I was reading an Apache book this morning.
Oh, you are.
Boy, talk about diving into the geekdom there.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
I'm going to speak at the Apache conference in Las Vegas.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm really excited to go. And I'm giving a keynote speech, actually.
Oh,
which I've never done before. I'm scared to death. And my keynote is going to be about open source software versus closed source software.
Oh, wow.
Instead of it being the typical, like, you know, yeah, we're going to kill them. You know, I just think that a lot of that stuff just degenerates into bashing Microsoft.
Oh,
and,
it does.
And preaching to the choir.
Yeah.
My suggestion is that we in the open source community have done a very bad job of communicating to the rest of the world why open source is better than closed source.
Mm-hmm.
Like why it's better for business, why it's better for security, why it's definitely better for the consumer.
Oh, yeah.
And how we can utilize the internet, like the fundamental design of the internet allows us to go around traditional gatekeepers, you know,
mm-hmm.
and how we can use the internet to get our message out.
Yeah.
And how I use the internet to kind of, you know, go from, you know, take myself from has been to almost is.
Well, and I also notice you're going to be keynoting at GnomeDex with Chris Perrello. I was talking to Chris last night.
Yeah, I'm actually performing at GnomeDex. I am performing for my books.
Oh, okay.
Rather than getting up and giving a talk on something that someone else can cover better than me, I'm going to do what no one can do better than me, which is read my material.
All right. Oh, that'd be very entertaining. Yeah. Oh, only that could be captured and streamed or something.
Yeah. Well, I'm actually working on an audio version of Just a Geek right now.
Oh, you are?
That would be terrific.
There are so many. It's about 8 hours to read, and I can only do it between 1 and 2 hours at a time because my voice starts to go.
Mm-hmm. You can take your time.
It's kind of like, I mean, for when I read it, it's more of a performance than a reading.
Sure.
And it requires a lot of emotional energy.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to kind of pace myself. If you've read the book, it's kind of an emotional roller coaster.
Oh, it is, most definitely.
It is. We did. And oh, my goodness, you're not kidding.
It's tough to do. It really drains you to try and focus that long.
I've realized, as I've been touring with my book, and I've done a couple of, you know, kind of Star Trek conventions, and I'm working on a show that's based on the material from this book, from both of these books.
Like a one-man stand?
Yeah, I hate saying that. Yeah, I'm doing a one-man show. It sounds so, like, up with people. It sounds so pretentious and so ridiculous. But, yeah, I mean, it's a one-man show. It's taking what I've done, and it's dramatizing it. I'm trying so hard to come up with a better description. But I don't know. That's pretty much what it is. You know, my goal, my dream is, I've got this CD, David Sedaris, Live at Carnegie Hall. I want Will Wheaton live at Carnegie Hall.
Well, you'll get there.
So that's where I'm going. Like practice, practice, practice.
Yes.
That's how you get the Carnegie Hall.
Well, and then you write it on the, you know, yeah, you write it down, put it in the billfold. And,
yeah.
Yeah. It'll come true.
Yeah. So I'm doing that. And,
oh,
you know,
that'd
I've
be
got
cool.
all these little holes in my backyard where I go out under the full moon and write down, I will get the Carnegie Hall, and then I bury it and spit in the hole. So I'm working on it. Yeah, and
Ferris
and,
is helping.
But, and but actually, and I dig with an old circuit board.
Oh, you do? Okay. Well,
I'm going to ask you about Ferris. He's still with us, right?
Yes.
Okay. Didn't want to bring up a bad thing.
No, all my animals are fine. I took Biko to the vet this morning. Ferris goes tomorrow. Felix, I did have to hospitalize Felix earlier this year, but he's made a complete recovery.
Well, you know, Rob and I have been foster parents for 300 kittens from the Humane Society up here.
Oh, wow.
We've had them come through our house. Not all at once.
Wow.
But yeah, I totally, really, my heart melted for your wife with that whole roadside kitten horrible issue. You know,
I read that story today when I was doing the my audiobook,
mm-hmm.
and it's hard to read that without crying for mm-hmm. me. Because I remember her calling me.
Oh, yeah.
I remember when she called me from the freeway. I could hear the roar of the traffic in the background, and she was sobbing. Said, I tried so hard to save him, and I was just, if I had pulled over 30 seconds earlier, if I didn't have to back up, if I had run out, and I just thought, gosh, man, you stopped on the freeway.
Yeah. That's...
You know, and she was devastated about it.
But she held that kitten when it died, and that's, you just cannot shake that. And it's horrible.
It's pretty traumatic. One other part of your book that was really fascinating to me was your experience at the Star Trek. It's an exhibition down in Las Vegas.
Star Trek the Experience.
Yeah, exactly. Where you actually went through that, and it really brought you back to almost like a home experience or a family experience. Why don't you kind of run through quickly for us kind of what you went through during that?
I went to Las Vegas for a big Star Trek convention in 2001. It was mm-hmm. celebrating 35 years of the original Star Trek. While I was there, I went on Star Trek The Experience at the Las Vegas Hilton. The whole experience is recounted in Just a Geek, and then in greater detail it's recounted in Dancing Barefoot.
Mm-hmm.
But the really interesting thing that happened and the kind of life-changing experience I had, I guess, was this ride, Star Trek The Experience. I thought it was just going to be a motion simulator. But they end up placing the visitors, you know, people going on the ride, they ended up putting us on a replica of the bridge of my Enterprise. And it's full of people in spacesuits. And Jonathan Frakes was on the view screen talking to us, you know, like he's Riker.
Mm-hmm.
And it put me back on stage 9 in 1988. And actually at one point, a woman says, you know, she like talks into her communicator. She says, I have them, Commander. Welcome to the 24th century. You're on Starship Enterprise. And she could have said to me, you know, welcome back to 1988. Well, you're at Paramount on stage 9. And it was like going back to high school, but nothing has changed. It was really this experience of being a ghost in my own past, of being able to see things exactly the way that they were. And looking around, all these memories came flooding back to me about how much I loved being on that show. Mm-hmm. And how much I loved the cast, and how much I loved Paramount, and just how much I loved my dressing room, and you know, and the
Warhammer. It was a really great show. There's no question about it. Yeah.
It just reminds me of all that stuff, and I realized at that time that I had spent all these years kind of, you know, running away from Star Trek, partly because, you know, I had the proof to everyone that quitting Star Trek was a mistake, but also because I had been so hurt by the producers of Star Trek and by some of the Star Trek fans. And then regretted a lot of the choices that I made. But while I was there, you know, I just thought, God, what a waste, you know? Star Trek is cool. And I really liked being a part of it, and I'm not going to run away from it anymore. And it was just like I wanted to throw open the doors of the Tribolith. Like, Spirit, what day is it? Can I have another chance?
Yeah, I can understand.
Oh, I'm so glad you have such great memories. And then you can also go to Vegas anytime you want and relive
them. That's right.
Yeah,
that's
one of the benefits of Vegas.
Will, thank you so much.
Yeah,
for
thank
your
you,
time.
Will. It was great to be speaking with you.
Yeah, right on. I'm really happy to talk to you guys.
I just want to tell everybody that, of course, you can get Dancing Barefoot and Just a Geek. Both are available everywhere. Amazon happens to have them at 32% off right now. And I really, really, really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We've been enjoying a conversation with actor and author Will Wheaton. Of course, he's a blogger, too, over at willwheaton.net. You can get either of his two books, Just a Geek or Dancing Barefoot, published by O'Reilly Press at any bookstore near you, and, of course, online at all the usual locations. And we highly recommend both books. They're just as entertaining as he has been here this last hour with us. Now, if you don't have a copy of the book and you feel like you know will, you have a chance now to win either a copy of Just a Geek or Dancing Barefoot, thanks to the generosity of Will and of O'Reilly Books. We really appreciate that. But we're not just giving away without a little effort on your part. So you've got to prove to us that you do know a little bit about Will, and you have been to willwheaton.net and explored around and enjoyed his clever writings. So we have a couple of questions, three to be exact, and you have to answer all of them and email us at webtalkradio.com. You can direct that to Dana, D-A-N-A, at webtalkradio.com. And the first two correct emails I get that are also entertaining and witty among themselves, so please put a little effort into that. We will send out to you either a copy of Dancing Barefoot or Just a Geek. Okay, now for the questions, and these all can be found at willwheaton.net. If you didn't hear him mention it here in the interview today, definitely go explore around. The first one is, Will does actually share a little bit about his family, but not much, so we do respect his privacy. But one thing he does share is when he and Anne got married. What year did Will get married? Will's geeky activities don't just happen online. He actually gets out into real life and has done quite a number of interesting things. What geeky tech activity took Will to a mountain, and what was the name of that mountain? And finally, Will, of course, has a lot of causes and interests that he particularly advocates. For what cause did Will march in protest? It's a big march in California, and you can find that information to actually all of these questions from the website. So we have actually, what year did Will get married? What geeky tech activity did he participate in that took him to a mountain? What was the name of that mountain? And what cause did he march in protest for? Send your email with all four answers in a cleverly written email to Dana at webtalkradio.com and get a copy of either of his two books. The winners will be from the first two emails that I receive. And that should do it for us for another week. Thank you so much for listening to Web Talk Radio. We've enjoyed having you here, and we hope that you gleaned a little bit of information that you can use in your digital lifestyle in the week to come.
Thanks for letting us into your lives, and we'll be back with you for another show next week at webtalkradio.com, and we'll see you around the net.
Thank you for downloading the Web Talk Guys. Bookmark us now for next week. Same Web Talk Guys time, same Web Talk Guys channel. I'm